Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Brett DiDonato, CTO and co-founder at QuickFrame. Thank you to yourself for taking the time. It's much appreciated, and I can only imagine how busy you are with all kind of your responsibilities over at QuickFrame. So thank you so much for taking the time.
No, not a problem.
So, you know, I think that like all people who are kind of co-founders and are very entrepreneurial by spirit, the first kind of question, I suppose, for me naturally that I'd want to know, and I think a lot of people is they want to know if there's any of those comparable traits in themselves. When you were kind of younger growing up, were you kind of always, I suppose, just kind of that self-starter, you know, creative type of person, or was it something that just sort of organically happened as you were sort of progressing through your career and you saw sort of opportunities?
Well, I think there was maybe a few things, just doing small projects and stuff. You know, delivered newspapers when I was 11 years old, you know, so just doing that for, you know, better part of 5 years. So I started working early, I suppose, and, working on, you know, I was, you know, using computers when I was 5 or 6 years old and would do, you know, not programming projects at that age, but, you know, small projects, working on, small graphic, graphics applications at the time and, do small projects here and there. So, I think that is, maybe something that, as you said, a self-starter. And, as I progressed, I would, have phases of doing things and not doing things on my own. But, I think that is, as you said, the biggest thing to work on your own projects and everybody, who becomes good at developing software, you know, from what I've seen, predominantly works on their own things at various stages of their life to become really good at it.
Yeah, why is that? I see that so much now, and I think that they seem to be almost synonymous now. When people think of innovation, people think of kind of developers. Is it just because the skill set, in order to have the skill set and be actually good at it, you have to sort of be that way inclined? Is that really what it boils down to?
I don't think so much. I mean, there's certainly, you know, people have certain knack for certain talents, right? Certain people are, you know, built to be salespeople or built to be technologists necessarily. But I feel like the act of just going and doing, you learn so much and you validate if you thought you knew something, exactly how much you know something by doing it. And there's not any projects that I worked on where just, you know, beginning to end, you know, worked exactly how I expected. There's always, new challenges, new things to learn, change in perspective throughout that. So I think that helps with, you know, the creative process and the, the skills process.
Yeah. It's like there isn't this sort of linear wheels in motion kind of how to guide, is there? You know, if something kind of doesn't go wrong, there isn't. It's not like you can just kind of Google it and you know, the answer's right there necessarily. Sometimes you have to be creative, be innovative in a sense to come up with a solution. And with development, you get bugs and et cetera. And there's no
necessarily blueprint on how to fix every single one. There's kind of a process involved with that. The thoughts involved with it are kind of the same motions that you would go through with kind of a scaled project, I suppose. And I think that's probably why, we look at developers now who are, essentially leading the way as the people who are, building all these, fantastic startups and such. It's kind of alludes to the fact of what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly different types of development. And when you're learning, you want to, kind of follow exercises and follow tutorials and, perhaps be part of a larger team where you can have somebody to, guide you on more specific tasks as you learn how the pieces kind of fit together and the different options that are there, right? Sometimes it can be just overwhelming with the number of choices that you can make, and it can be helpful to reduce that scope when you're getting started, certainly. But that's always a challenge to, make those decisions that then, are executed on, and the priority and all those sorts of factors.
When you think about drawing comparisons to solving problems, solving development problems, to then what you ended up doing and kind of becoming, a founder and a building companies, there's obvious things that are different there. But what was kind of the biggest change for kind of going to solving problems to all of a sudden taking on a company? Was it sort of the, the personal risk associated with it, kind of the unknown element? What for you, when you were kind of looking at taking on or building your own business, what were the things that made you think the most?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is just the realization that you're not guaranteed anything, right? It's, it's to be determined what you're going to necessarily get out of it, business growth wise or customer wise or even professional wise, right? It's, it's much less specific than you would at a role at a company. And so you just never know if people are going to like it, if somebody could do something better, if it, it's even going to work. So all those risks factor. Suppose there's always the personal opinions of others of what types of things you're working on. That should probably be the least thing that you're focused on.
So when you kind of decided to take that leap of faith, and go for things, there's obviously a tremendous amount of doubt and all the kinds of emotions I can imagine that kind of come along with trying to build something on your own back. But what really helped you kind of keep things into perspective and keep things kind of organized? Were you really kind of methodical in the process? And what did kind of that process to getting started kind of look like? And I suppose to add on to that, you must have been pretty confident as well in your own abilities to kind of pursue starting up a business, for example.
Well, I think that I was working full time for a number of years in the financial software industry, and the latter half of that, at least, I would start working on my own projects after hours and on weekends, and those were motivated by some of the more interesting things that I saw technology wise going on with Web 2.0 related technologies that made building complex web applications easier and more interesting. Working on iPhone apps, I've built a number of iPhone apps. And so when I received my iPhone, one of the first things that I wanted to do was to start building applications for that. And I would just, start building all sorts of projects, come up with ideas or just trying to test to make sure that I'm, learning and understanding things well. And, I had one website before I got into iPhone development, and I eventually released an iPhone app for it. Related to the financial industry. And, I made a little bit of money from advertising through that website and learned a little bit about SEO and related technologies. It was never a pursuit to be a full-time business necessarily, but was, a good place to learn and refresh my skills in that space, which were not, necessarily used in financial software. And then when I was, on the weekend, I was just reading an algorithms book, and I came up with a, concept for a product that I wanted to build, and did some research and saw that some, very big companies tried similar types of products and some smaller startups as well. But I didn't really think any of them were, you know, all that spectacular. I felt like I could maybe do something a little bit better, a little bit more interesting or custom. And, you know, over the course of about 10 weeks, I developed something, you know, fairly simple, but, you know, something that was, you know, what you would call maybe an MVP, and, you know, put it out there. And it ended up getting featured in TechCrunch and passed around the technical community over the course of the holiday season that year. And that was definitely a big motivator for myself to say, okay, I can put something out there that people seem to find interesting, that I can, you know, build myself, that I wasn't sure if I could, you know, do something like that. You know, that was a big motivation to, you know, leave the full-time position that I was in and to start working on my own projects and, you know, pursuing more entrepreneurial, you know, type of endeavors.
And when you were kind of starting to build the kind of life cycle of the product, I think it's probably an overwhelming thing, or at least I can imagine it being a very overwhelming thing when you kind of decided, right, let's do it full time. I suppose, one, how overwhelming was that? And from the next steps after that, what were the sort of steps that you then took to kind of, you know, actually build this thing and to continue to improve it?
Oh, I mean, I think that, you know, measuring what I felt was working, trying related integration. So I was basically, the product was a GIF recommendation based off of your social profile information. And so I started out, you know, utilizing information from Facebook. And then I later expanded it to Twitter. You know, it was the second most popular social platform, at least at the time. And, you know, we put in a few other product updates that seemed like, you know, good natural fits. You know, the learnings from that were, you know, measuring some of the data on the website. But especially early on, I would just take my iPad out to a coffee shop, you know, during the day and, you know, find somebody that seemed like a good candidate that wasn't, you know, too occupied. And I asked them if they wanted to check out this new website, and just watching them interact with the product in person, you know, was a valuable insight that I do try to recreate when I can with products, just to see that they didn't notice, you know, the button, or they didn't read the text that you had there, or, you know, they didn't, you know, understand the navigation. And so, you know, that sort of feedback is something that you want to definitely do in the beginning, but you want to continuously do, you know, throughout your development.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of people would kind of steer away from that because people are so kind of obsessed with data sets and the data set being big enough. But I think it's a really, really good point is that, you know, just to actually see strangers, how they interact with, you know, your products is probably much more to be learned there than I think people let on. Everyone's kind of obsessed with having, you know, testing and pulling data from a certain size of a data set. But yeah, I think you're right. That's amazing, the insights you get just from watching people interact.
Yeah, well, and when you're starting out as well, before certainly pre-launch, or even if you've launched something and you're not getting a lot of traffic and you don't want to pay to acquire a lot of traffic, you're not going to have much data to go off of, right? And the data that you have could be, you know, not statistically significant. It could be noisy. There could be the people that you're acquiring might not be the people you actually want to acquire, you know, as at a scalable level. And so you have to kind of be careful how you interpret the feedback that you get.
And, you know, I suppose from the feedback kind of generated, was it implemented straight away? What was kind of the kind of the post feedback phase and kind of the, I suppose, the application of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that every product and every, you know, stage of business that you're at, you know, is different how you're going to act upon that. You know, for my current company, we're at a much later stage and, you know, we've been out there for a while. We have revenues, we have, you know, many customers, and we have a larger team that I've worked in a entrepreneurial endeavor before. So it's a very different process than it would have been at a smaller company at an earlier stage, which we were at, you know, obviously earlier. So yeah, you want to kind of decide sometimes, well, what is the feedback? And, you know, is that feedback that you're getting, if they tell you something specific, well, I don't like that, does that mean that they don't like that? Or does that mean that there's actually something else, you know, lower level or related to that, that they're actually kind of going after? So just as an example, maybe you have a product that you want somebody to use on a regular basis, right? And so you can send them emails for notifications. You can send them push notifications on their phone to try to re-engage them on a regular basis, right? And maybe if you start to increase the frequency of those, you might increase your level of engagement, but you also might just be turning people off with the certain percentage of the people off with this increase. And then maybe not, the idea isn't that they're just forgetting about it. Maybe the idea is that they're just not as interested because of other factors, and that they don't necessarily, reminding them isn't necessarily going to fix the problem, right?
And I suppose a step aside from that, for you, what is it, what part in the kind of life cycle of this kind of product build from start to finish, how many things were kind of unexpected problems that you kind of would never actually have considered, you know, before you started out on the project?
Oh, I mean, those are going to outnumber your expected problems every time. And it's not like a problem is like, this doesn't work. It's a problem like people were expecting this, or they are turned off by that, or they're not using something that you expected them to use, or you garnered feedback and you adjusted and then you still didn't get the results you were looking for. So that's going to be, you know, the majority of products. You know, that's always going to be the process, is to continually improve upon that. And that's something that's never fully completed with even the, you know, most mature products, you know, out there.
Yeah, of course. What part of the product life cycle do you find kind of, I suppose, the most compelling, the most interesting, the thing that you kind of look forward to the most?
I think the most interesting thing is, you know, the products that I develop are mostly used, you know, by the users, right? It's not a, you know, it's not an API or something that another process would use. It's, you know, people are the end users for the most part. And just the idea of, you know, you're developing something in weeks or months or even years to get something that, you know, you envisioned and you, you know, hope would work well. And then you put it out there, and then people actually do start to use it, and they start to share it, and they, you know, give you feedback, both positive and negative. Just the idea that, you know, you came up with something, you built it, and then people are using it as a product or just as a feature within a product is something that always excites me. And you just never know, you know, how that you know, how that feedback, how that uptake is going to go.
Yeah, I suppose it's the fulfillment, isn't it? And it's the kind of the idea that something that you kind of creatively thought up, and then it's actually happened, and then people are actually enjoying it. It's probably a few of the elements kind of pulled together, and then that's kind of the positive feedback, sort of the cherry on the cake, isn't it?
Yeah, just as an example with our current company, we had a soft launch before we launched the full-fledged product. With a small part of the platform that we were developing, that I decided let's push it out there. We had a small business partnership that we were using to promote it, and you know, put it out there the first day. We had some posts on social promoting the product, and for 3 or 4 hours, the website just sat there barren. You know, nobody visited, nobody did anything, and you just have this thought in your head of, oh no, you know, nothing's coming of this. And then all of a sudden, you know, somebody saw, you know, the post on social. They came to the site, and it was a process to basically submit your user video for a competition. And somebody submitted their video. They then reposted on social their video to promote, you know, their entry into it. And then over the next few hours, the traffic just started to build up and up and up. And over the next few days, you know, we've had thousands of visitors from around the world, and, you know, I think like 100 or so videos, you know, out of nothing. And so, you know, those first few hours, you just assume the worst, and then all of a sudden, just through luck or, you know, just through good timing, you know, it built up, you know, and that was really interesting to observe.
Oh, I can imagine. I wouldn't have been able to handle that suspense. I'd have had to go on down the pub or something and had a beer while I waited for it to build up. I couldn't have sat there. Couldn't have sat there and looked at the analytics the whole time. That would have killed me.
Well, I would tab back to it. I was trying to get some work done, but I was probably not that productive.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a little bit too distracting. That, you know, the creative side of it fascinates me, and then obviously the skill to execute it is also very impressive. When you kind of have these creative thoughts now, is it a collaborative effort for you that you kind of thrive off to get the kind of creative process going now?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. Sometimes it's just like you get an idea sparked from, you know, something related or unrelated, and you go with it. And it's nice to, you know, having built up the skills to be able to potentially, you know, build a lot of those things by myself if I was, you know, had the free time and was interested in it. Nowadays, it's more of a collaborative effort. So, you know, with a larger team, you know, we solicit feedback from, you know, various employees with their direct interaction with the people that use the product. We have people on the team with, you know, deep understanding of the industry and the subject matter beyond what I do. So, you know, their perspective is, you know, always warranted and wanted as part of the, you know, the decision-making process. So, nowadays, it's a very collaborative effort. But when you're getting started, and you have a small team, you know, sometimes it's just yourself or, you know, there's limited amounts of, you know, feedback, garnering of feedback and collaboration at that stage. And, you know, sometimes you want to, you know, take feedback in and then distill it down and then kind of take it from there. And sometimes you really want to have everybody around to kind of point by point review and discuss things. It really depends on what you're developing and, you know, what your, you know, understanding and expertise is and what you're building as well.
And now that you've built something that's, you know, kind of proven to be successful, there's obviously creative elements to that still involved. But what is it that sort of continues to motivate and kind of drive you you know, on a kind of sort of day-to-day basis?
I mean, I think it's improving that process. I don't think we're at the stage where I feel, you know, ultra satisfied or comfortable with what we developed. And, you know, even with, you know, the successes, there's still, you know, a lot of room for improvement, a lot of new features to develop, a lot of completely new but related products to build as well. So, I don't think that process ends, at least for quite a long time, with most products. So I don't think that, you know, I've even gotten to the point with any of the things that I developed where I was kind of like, oh, well, I'm done with that completely. There's nothing else I can do to improve it or, make it better. And, you know, I feel like that is the case with most, you know, most products.
And I think just the way, you know, kind of, you are inclined. I don't think that's ever going to be the case where you're going to be able to sit back and think, ah, I've done it. You know, I don't think that day will ever come.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it as well, is never truly being satisfied, which is, you know, not a good thing to do with every part of your life, but with the thing that you're developing is probably a good characteristic.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Brett. Brett, thanks for taking the time. That was awesome, actually. I really enjoyed kind of how you kind of took us through the product life cycle from kind of the ideas phase all the way to where you are now. You know, it's really impressive. You know, I'm particularly impressed about how you've gone about things and already the early successes that you've shown. You know, we obviously wish you the best of luck, continued growth. I don't doubt that. That it's going to come. So thank you so much for kind of sharing that with us today.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.